I want to call to order the Joint Ways and Means Committee on Natural Resources today, the 15th of February, 2017. We're going to continue discussing the Parks Recreation budget, and I understand we have six people right now signed up to speak, so I'm going to open a public hearing on, not a public hearing, yep. but a general public hearing on this budget, and I have several people scheduled to step up and speak. So we'll start off with Seth Miller, Lee Davis, and Mike Ragsdale. Mike Ragsdale, hello, Mike. Please come forward. You can all come forward. Not all. You don't have to be one. Sit up here. That's fine. Unless you don't like each other, then we'll deal with that.
We really just met him, so.
Yeah. All right.
We've never done it before. At least I have.
Please. Thank you. Pardon? Are you ready? Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Co-Chair Frederick and members of the committee, my name is Lee Davis. I'm from Portland. I'm the executive director of the Mazamas. We're here to support House Bill 5028 to fund the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. The Mazamas were formed on the summit of Mount Hood in 1894 by the leaders of Portland, people like Henry Pittock, Henry Gleason, Northrop, and William Steele, who was the leader in creating Crater Lake National Park, so Crater Lake National Park is in Mount Mazama, which is named after our organization. We have a 120-year legacy of promoting responsible recreation, outdoor education, and conservation values in the state of Oregon. And on behalf of our 3,700 members in Portland and everyone who loves to play in and protect the mountains, we believe that the OPRD's budget should be expanded so that they can increase staff capacity and address critical infrastructure needs because of our fast-growing and diversifying population in Oregon. Smith Rock State Park is a great example of that. Still working with a very similar staff to what they've had years ago, while rock climbing and recreation popularity in that park in particular has exploded. Nonprofit partners like us, private sector nonprofit partners like us, also need more coordination support to continue adding our resources to stewardship efforts and to get kids outside in and across our state. And I'd like to make the point that we believe recreation has been traditionally viewed as a wish list item in our priority set, and it really should be a must-have item. Responsible outdoor recreation is core to the very quality and character of life in Oregon. It's a primary part of why many of us live here, why we love it here, and why so many people are moving here. When people, children in particular, spend time recreating outside, it improves their mental and physical health, their engagement in their community, their interest in learning and in education, and their ability to sort of absorb conservation values and hold them throughout their lives. Recreation also means business. In Oregon alone, it's a $12.8 billion industry supporting more than 140,000 jobs and nearly $1 billion in tax revenue for the state. It's a new and a growing economy, and one that we should invest in. So supporting this bill and funding OPRD is an expression of the importance of outdoor recreation to Oregon and to our quality of life here, and I encourage you to consider that as you address this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. What I think we'll do is we'll probably go through the other folks here, and then we can come back to discussing things.
Okay.
Please introduce yourself.
And Chair Frederick, my name is Seth Miller, and thank you to the members of the committee for giving me the opportunity to talk to you today. I'm a resident of Portland. I'm the executive director of the Oregon State Parks Foundation. You probably know the Oregon State Parks Foundation is the only statewide independent nonprofit partner of the Parks Department. And our mission is to enhance the experience of using the parks and to help preserve some of the iconic facilities of the parks. In the course of my work with the foundation, I found that many citizens of our state don't know that the Oregon State Parks are not paid for by the state taxes. They take them basically for granted, assuming that they're paid for by the taxes, and they don't differentiate the state park system from all the other wonderful parks in the state. Typically, people will say to me, oh, I love Crater Lake. Well, that's not a state park. I love Multnomah Falls. That's not a state park. And so we deal with this on a regular basis. They are also shocked to find out that the lottery contributions fell by about $20 million per biennium and haven't recovered. And so there's just kind of a lack of awareness out there. So that's part of what we do in our story, and we're telling about why we're supporting the parks. Other experiences in working with the foundation, I have found that the field staff are extremely shorthanded. As I travel around the parks, and in the last year I've been to more than 70 of them, I've seen that the field staff are really hanging on by their fingernails. Visitation has continued to increase significantly, and the staff are asked to wear more and more hats. And I'm really surprised that some of the people in the back here and people as I see around the state don't have their tongues hanging out in exhaustion. When you look at the 255 parks, there are only 300 staff, full-time staff in the field. So that means that many of the parks have to share rangers and wear many hats. They're asked to be everything from nature guides and interpretive rangers to guest service managers, checking in guests, collecting money, entering visitor information and selling firewood, to maintenance and janitorial staff, cleaning teepees, restrooms, yurts and cabins, to landscaping, maintenance and construction, to being park police officers, managing traffic, checking parking parking permits, issuing tickets, and also dealing with bad behavior on the part of a few visitors. So in many of the hats, you've got people wearing, in many of the parks, you've got many people wearing all these hats. As you know, the parks are an important part of the image, lifestyle, and economic vitality of the state. For example, our longest state park, the Oregon Coast Beaches, is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. And this is one of the most significant economic generators that we have. Looked at as a single park, the 362-mile-long beach with its more than 100 state public access points and dozens of scenic viewpoints attracts more than 28 million visits each year. That's almost five times as many visits as the iconic Grand Canyon gets in a year. The National Park Service money generation model says that there's a ratio of a return to the community of 26 to 1 for dollars spent in the parks. We don't have the exact number for that for Oregon, but if you took that number and applied that to Oregon, it's an incredible return. I've also seen that there are great variations in visitation across the parks. As you heard, places like Smith Rock and Pilot Butte are very much overloved. And they're overflowing with visitors and unable to keep up with the needs for additional parking, restrooms, and to deal with the visitors who don't stay on the trails, vandalize elements of the parks, and leave their trash behind. And some of the campgrounds, demand is so high that visitors have to book reservations months in advance in order to have any prayer of being able to get a camping space, much less a cabin, yurt, or teepee. And it seems only reasonable to me that some form of capacity management demand redirection should be employed to spread the usage around the system. I think the department's proposal to move to a flexible pricing model makes an awful lot of sense to help deal with this problem. Our foundation is also working hard with the department to connect the parks with education. I gather that yesterday you saw a video about our Ticket to Ride program. This is a program where we're funding up to $500 for teachers to take their kids to parks in K-8 classes. We now have enough funding for more than 9,000 students to go to the parks in this coming year. And that continues to grow. It turns out to be a very popular program. Also, we've partnered with Eastern Oregon University to start an outdoor school in Cottonwood Canyon for high school students. And we're hoping that this will be a model for use of the state park properties to be helping to meet the need for residential outdoor school for every fifth and sixth grader in the state. As you know, Measure 99 has passed, and there's my understanding is one of the issues with Measure 99 is that there's not enough residential outdoor school capacity in rural parts of the state to be able to use that money effectively and to serve the needs of the students in the area. And so we're working on a model of using what we're calling pop-up schools, following what we've been doing in Cottonwood Canyon, to be able to use other state park properties. But as we work on these programs, we run smack into the staffing challenges with the parks. Both these initiatives, and as well as initiatives we hear about from people like Solve in their Adopt a Beach program, require higher level staffing than in the what's formerly been known as the shoulder seasons, the spring and the fall. And some of this is based on the availability of dollars, and some of it's based on, I guess, statute, which controls the department based on FTEs. Well, we've looked at it from a foundation perspective and said, can we raise private money to help supplement the staff? And the answer is no, you know, we're held to FTEs. It's something I think it's worth thinking about, you know, because we do have other sources. We could go out and bring in extra money for these programs and help supplement the staffing needs in the parks. So in summary, if the department's going to be able to move forward beyond being simply a source of recreation to also being a vehicle for education, if we're going to be able to expose more of the state's children to our wonderful parks, and if our children are going to become better stewards of our land and get exposed to a wide range of career and technical opportunities in sciences, technology, engineering, and math, then the Parks Department needs to be able to have the appropriate staffing to be able to support these activities. And I'm pleased to be able to strongly support the budget proposal of the State Parks Department and hope that you'll understand the need for the changes that they're requesting. I'll wait for your questions.
Thanks.
Thank you. You can move in there. That would be great. Thank you, sir. Would you introduce yourself?
My name is Mike Ragsdale, Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee. I'm here today representing the Newburgh Downtown Coalition, which is a 501c3 not-for-profit member of the Oregon Main Street Program. Mm-hmm. We formed about 9 years ago, 10 years ago, actually, when the Chamber of Commerce had a task force to figure out what they could do about a very much declining downtown. You know the story. The downtown was being, all the life was being sucked out of downtown by the malls that were outside. Fred Meyer had a big mall, and everybody was concerned about what to do. So they looked around the world, and they decided that the Main Street program would be a great way to make an effort to improve downtown. I was asked if I would be willing to put that together, and I did. I headed it up, and interestingly enough, in order to find out what the Main Street program was about, I contacted the Oregon Main Street program, which had just been revitalized by the legislature at that time and had just hired an executive director. I called the executive director of the Oregon Main Street program, and I got Sherry Stewart on her first day on the job. So she came to our community to share with our public leaders and members of the chambers and others about what a Main Street program could do, and the community embraced it wholeheartedly. So we're now 8-10 years old, and our downtown has gone from 14 vacancies on our main First Street to two. There are two vacancies now, which we consider full occupancy because there's always some kind of a turnover. But more significant is we've had a complete change in the appearance of downtown, and to a large part because of the grants and the staffing that are provided by this agency. We've worked with the Diamonds in the Rough program, we've worked with a certified local government program, we've worked with a number of programs. When working through Sherry Stewart at the Main Street program, she introduced us to the other programs that were available from SHPO and grants and different strategies, and we've embraced the opportunity to bring, and they then bring into our community architectural experts, historic restoration experts, people to help us with projects. An example is we had a small building that had the ugliest, we considered to be the ugliest building in downtown. It had a sheet metal front, you know, very popular in the 50s. And when we pull that sheet metal forward, we could look behind it and we could see it was an old masonry building built in the early 1900s. So the state didn't have a grant program to really help us out. And they went away after we talked to them about desire. The property owners wanted some help. And they very shortly thereafter came up with a new grant program. It was called Diamonds in the Rough. And it was designed for old buildings that you could remove a false front and restore the old building. Perfect fit for our building. Our property owners, in a partnership with my organization, the 501c3 not-for-profit, with the state staff and the grant and the private property owner, created a partnership to restore that building. We're now working on our fifth building. in that context. It is not an urban renewal facade improvement program. It is not a city-funded program. It's a program where the private property owner, with the facilitation of the Main Street program, comes together with the grants that are offered by SHPWA, and we're having amazing results in our community. So I'm here today to talk to you, to share with you. Most people don't know the Main Street program exists, and it's an incredibly vibrant program that's making a difference in so many of our small to medium-sized downtowns, that I'm here today to tell you that they've got a great staff to work with, they've got excellent programs, and without the assistance that we're getting from them, we would not be half of where we are as a result of that activity. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Do you have any questions? Does the committee have any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This is a question for Lee. I personally already believe that the department does a great job in fulfilling their mission, but I wonder whether we've fully tapped the capacities of state parks to fulfill some of our ambitions for the outdoor recreation community and tourism in the state. And I would invite any of your thoughts on that.
Well, I believe that Representative Helm, I believe that the recreation infrastructure, the staffing structure of our state parks was really sort of envisioned and designed for a different time, when our population was much smaller, when interest in what I would call fast immersion sports was almost unknown. So sports like rock climbing, backcountry skiing, paragliding, you know, things that you can mountain running, things that you can do in a single day are now the most popular forms of recreation. It used to be that we would, you know, leave work early on Friday, spend the whole weekend outside, and then come back. And now the thing is, you know, you leave early Saturday morning, you try to get to the park, do your thing, and get back for a party or a dinner or some other thing you've got going on. So, and additionally, with population growing and diversifying, you know, we need to recognize that diverse populations want to go outside in larger groups, want to go outside with their families, and that some of the traditional forms of recreation really are kind of waning. And we need to make sure that future generations and populations feel very welcome and the parks are accessible to them. So that they, you know, develop conservation values and care about our great state. So I don't think we're doing everything we can. I mean, the number of park rangers at Smith Rock is, for all practical purposes, the same as it was 10 years ago. And, you know, and that place is out of control in terms of popularity. And, I mean, last summer you were parking more than a mile down the side roads just to get into the park. And additionally, people are recognizing these special places as, you know, sightseeing in addition to outdoor recreation. So a lot of the visitors to Smith Rock in particular are just coming to take a picture and leave. And so the sort of architecture of how we've developed that place needs to shift to recognize that some people just want to come in and take a picture and leave and be there with their family for a picnic. And other people are going to want to spend a whole day or a weekend or even months there. So I think there's an awful lot we can do.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? No. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And let's see. I have Dan, is it Ickland, and Peggy Rink, and Christine Robertson Gardner. Here we are. Thank you. Please go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for having us here today, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Peggy Rink, and I have been a state employee for 17 years. All 17 of those years have been with the Parks and Recreation Department. The reason I'm here today is because I'm currently the Parks and Recreation Department SEIU president, and so I deal with a lot of issues inside and outside of headquarters and out in the field. One of the things that we do as a union is we create a committee where labor and management comes together. and they discuss certain issues and things and try to solve them at the lowest level. One of the things that we did about 5 years ago was create a labor management committee where we discuss things that are not contractual. Something that we've been bringing to labor management since the beginning is, why can't we get more staff? The answer we've always gotten is, you can't ask that question. And so we at labor management have been very persistent, and we keep asking the question, and finally, you know, somebody has said, hey, you know, maybe they're right. You know, maybe we do need to ask the question, can we get some more staff? We need more staff. Approximately, I think it was biennium 035 when governor said, you know, hey, you guys need to create 10 new parks. We were creating 10 new parks with no new staff and no new money. It makes it a little difficult to run a business that you're creating more businesses out of when you're given no more staff and no more money. So therefore, we did as we were told. We created more parks and done that with no staff. Our staff is moving from the east side to the west side, back to the east side. As you heard from the prior people, the staff is spread very thin. I mean, they're working at 110%, and they can only do so much. We are known as one of the most visited state park systems in the entire United States, and we are praised for our pristine parks. And with our staff levels at the ratio that they are, it's kind of hard to keep that level of beautifulness up. And so therefore, in asking for more staff to create boots on the ground work to make sure that the parks look the way that they should, when our customers from Oregon or Australia, for instance, come and visit them, they will have the same stories to send back that they had 4 or 5 years ago. And I'll give you just a small business scenario. Open up a business, say, for instance, on the coast, and you've got 4 businesses and you've got 16 employees. Now, all of a sudden, somebody comes to you and says, hey, now you get to open up 4 more businesses over in the valleys, but you've still got 16 employees that you're going to work with. So you're like, okay, well, I'm going to have to spread these pretty thin. Well, now you've had these employees' families that have had to move from where they're used to being. They're moving into new jobs if they want to stay with the current agency that they're with. So now we've taken 16 people from four stores, and we've moved them into 8 stores. Now we're going to broaden our horizons, and we're going to move to the east side, and we're going to say, now we want 4 more stores. Well, now you've got 12 stores and 16 employees. At some point, you're going to have some store that's not going to have any employees. Who's going to suffer? The customer. You know, and what we give is world service, you know, customer service, and if we are going to continue to be able to do that, we need to have more boots on the ground to continue to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Eichlin. I live in Bend, Oregon. I am a park ranger at Prineville Reservoir State Park. I've worked at the Cove Palisades State Park as well. And I'm the vice president of Parks Local 733 with SEIU as well. So that's why I'm here. I do want to echo the testimony that you've heard already, is that we are increasing facilities. We're increasing amenities, cabins, yurts, teepees, and even full campgrounds, but our staffing levels haven't changed one bit. As you can imagine, that causes stress fractures among our staff, and I see evidence of it, and I can give you prime examples. I know, for instance, it just comes to mind when Smith Rock is spoken about. That is a classic example. I know the last 3 rangers that have worked there, and they have left OPRD to go pursue other careers. They can't handle it by themselves. And these stress fractures, even where I am right now at Prineville Reservoir, I'm the lone ranger. And I've had 2 rangers leave, whether it be because the physical toll on their bodies or whatever it is. They're not happy, and they can pursue a career somewhere else. That's really sad, because we're losing well-qualified people who are talented and have great skill sets. So the stress fractures are there. I can give you personal testimony by saying, you know, we're in the business of creating memories for Oregon families, Oregonians, even folks from out of state who are just trying to learn about Oregon and experience its natural beauty. But when we ask for a day off or a weekend off, leave time, it's denied due to operational needs, because we don't have enough staff to cover it. I did ask to go to my grandmother's 100th birthday. This was about 6 or 7 years ago, and it was denied. And the reason why was because of operational needs. We need the staff. So this is a real problem. The stress fractures are affecting the state, not only because of our physical facilities, themselves, but on the working backs of the Rangers and Ranger assistants that are out there. So I really please ask you to take this very seriously. We want to keep our state parks in the best shape and some of the best in the country. And we get those comments in the field from visitors. Wow, these parks are great. They're beautiful. They're well run. Your professionalism is outstanding. That's all going to go down if we don't increase our staffing needs. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. I think we'll go to Christina.
Thank you, Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt. My name is Christina Robertson-Gardner. I'm a senior planner with the City of Oregon City and just recently finished 15 years as the preservation planner for Oregon City. So a lot like Newberg, I might kind of give you a little background of how state parks have helped leverage Oregon City funds.
Can you hold on just a second?
Sure.
Would you move a little bit away from the microphone?
Sorry.
Thank you.
I'm used to speaking low, so. So I said, Oregon City, you know, our preservation is often our identity, but it is also a source of our economic development in our community. And we have used almost every grant that the state parks have offered, and it's really an opportunity for a small city like Oregon City to leverage. So we leverage grants both at the state parks, through the State Historic Preservation Office, Heritage Commission, to make partnerships with our private and public partners. And that if anybody was, I don't know the last time any of you have been in downtown Oregon City, but if it has been a while, you need to go downtown. And over in the last 15 years, we've had a dramatic change in our downtown, and it is also towards the Main Street model. Today, you have successful restaurants. We have new creative service businesses. There's a blue-collar creative campaign that was actually started by our first Main Street manager, and we have really what we see as a really hub of creative services in the Clackamas County region who want to be in an urban downtown that's not Portland. And that really is based on that sense of place of an historic downtown, an historic place. And we've utilized, as a certified local government, we utilize our biannual certified local government funds to put national registered listings for our city resources, our 1955 elevators on the National Register, where also our Carnegie Library and our WPA Rockwork from the McLaughlin Promenade. And that's not only for pride of who we are, but it's also part of our economic development, that people come and want to live in Oregon City because it is it's a very unique place, and it's a place that differentiates itself from other places in the metropolitan region. And so that leveraging those state funds is very important for Oregon City. We also are one of four governments that are working very hard to bring public access to Willamette Falls. And we know very well that these really hard projects of pushing the boulder up the mountain requires lots of help. And so grants and support we get from SHPO and state parks are very, very helpful, because if Oregon City had to do really any of these on our own, we probably would fail, because we need to see that other people also support us, and we're more likely to get our local government to help give matching funds. So even if the grant is very small, you're more likely to get our local government to put that money in for a matching grant. Whereas if I had to go with staff and say, I need $15,000 to do this project, it'd be harder for me to get in the budget. Whereas if I say, I have a $7,500 grant, I just need $7,500 and we can do this amazing project, it's a lot easier. So those grants, while sometimes small, really help and bring a lot of our different heritage communities and our private partners together. And let's see, one other thing I wanted to say is, the technical staff at SHPO are amazing. People often think of the State Historic Preservation Office as gatekeepers, but they're really not. They're bridge builders. And we go, and I call a lot and say, I have this problem, I have this issue, what do you think about this? You know, they give a lot of technical support that I think a lot of people don't see, and it's really, really, I really, really thank them, and it helps my job as a local preservation planner really kind of be the best preservation planner I can be. So in general, we also, a lot like Newberg, really value all these grants and supports from the state parks and really support their proposed budget for this year, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Are there any questions? Just a comment, if you get a chance, you want to get to the Willamette Falls and see what's going on there.
Rediscoverthefalls.com.
Rediscover. Well done. It is. It's really extraordinary, and I've seen it for many, many years. The transformation that's it's already underway, and what they plan on doing is just astounding. So congratulations on that. Thank you very much, very much. We have one other person. Tom Wolf from Trout Unlimited would like to speak.
Not the author,
but are you an author too?
Yeah, I am, but
there you go.
Not as well. Actually, there were two Tom Wolfs that were, authors.
So. That's true.
So, co-chair Frederick, co-chair Witt, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited here, representing 3,200 members of Trout Unlimited here in the state and 155,000 nationally. I want to take a little bit different. It's always exciting to hear about people that have great things to talk about with their park system. I'm here for a little bit different, and that is to talk about staffing on things that really concern my members and people of my ilk, which is a fly fisherman, and that's rivers. And State Parks manages the Oregon Scenic Waterways program, and it's also involved currently in a cool project on the Salmonberry, the trail system there, and it also has some neat parks like Cottonwood Park that deal with rivers. So I'm here asking to make sure, as the other people do, that sufficient funding is detailed to these programs, because they're very important. They provide the Oregon State Scenic Waterways program provides additional protection for many great rivers. Oregon, and I have been fishing all over the United States, and I got to tell you, and I'm a little biased because I'm a sixth generation Oregon. Oregon has the best rivers in the United States and best in the world. And the state parks, what they're doing with their scenic waterways program is contributing to that. So I'm asking that continue these programs, which are often on the periphery of funding mechanisms, continue to be funded, and we continue to have great parks and great scenic waterways in this beautiful state of ours. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes.
Tom, would you be willing to opine on what's the best river in the state?
Yeah, real quick, off the top of my head, the best are the Middle Fork of the Willamette and Roaring River on the Clackamas. So I was responsible for making Roaring Wilderness into a wilderness area in 2008, you know, just to, because I'm retiring, I want you guys to know my legacy.
Very diplomatic.
Representative Escobar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom and I go back quite a ways, and I just wonder, you fished most every stream in the United States. Have you ever caught one?
As I remind people, co-chair Frederick, my good friend Representative Esco, as I tell people over and over, it's called fishing, not catching.
I think Representative Escobar would like to know, because he hasn't had that experience himself.
Oh, this is good.
Any other questions?
We're going to East Portland next.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Tom. Anyone else? Do we have anyone else who wanted to speak today? And I think we can close this particular public hearing, and you have some things that you wanted to say as well. Let me close the hearing, though, first. There we go.
Thank you, Chair Frederick, members of the subcommittee. I just wanted to make sure that everyone is aware that this subcommittee is meeting tomorrow. There are two agencies, the Department of State Lands and Dogami, who are seeking permission to apply for federal grants.
Thank you very much. And so we're going to adjourn this particular meeting. Thank you. We're going to adjourn this particular meeting. Thank you.